Good morning. Good morning. I'm really very happy to see you all. You remembered to come back after that week in between. The shiur this morning is dedicated to the memory of Feige Bas Naftali Hertz, Aleha Shalom, mother of Hannah Kempner. Today is her yahrzeit. Our learning of Torah shall be Le'ilui Nishmata. Now I tell you, I like to be honest. I had all sorts of thoughts of finding some kind of an excuse not to learn this Haftarah. So I was working on all sorts of different shurim, but I think we're going to save them. And the reason why I thought that I would not teach this Haftarah, because I think that it's the most difficult of all the Haftarahs of the year. It's just plain so difficult. Even the translation of the text, even the translation of the text is difficult. But then, on second, third, or fourth thought, I decided we're not going to be cowards. We're going to meet this Haftarah head on. And whatever it is that we're going to be able to cull from it, I'm sure we will gain. The Haftarah from Sefer Yechezkel. It's from chapter 43 in Yechezkel. Beginning with chapter 40 in Yechezkel until the end of the Sefer, chapter 48, there are 8 chapters that deal with the Jewish state in the future, the state of the Jewish state in the future, what the third Bet HaMikdash is going to look like, precise plans. And you're going to see some of the plans in the Haftarah. There are chapters in which Yechezkel describes the division of the land amongst the tribes. It's unbelievable. A whole plan for the future. It's all here in Sefer Yechezkel. 8 chapters. The portion that is the Haftarah deals with 2 parts. One, the construction of the Mizbeach, the altar in the Beit HaMikdash, which was described, one altar was described in Parshat Truma and another one in this week's Sedra, Parshat Tetzaveh. It is also going to describe part of the ceremony of inauguration and dedication of the third Beit HaMikdash. Now in the Sedra, chapter 29 in Parshat Tetzaveh is the description of what will take place at the inauguration of the Mishkan. Now I'm using 2 different words. One is inauguration and the other is dedication. I hope I'm using the words correctly. The inauguration were the 7 days that preceded the official dedication of the Beit HaMikdash, the Mishkan. The Mishkan was dedicated on one day, on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. We're going to come later on, we're going to come to Vayihi Vayom Hashmini, and it came to pass on the 8th day. There were 7 days of dedication, and they are the inauguration. I better keep my terms correct. There were 7 days of inauguration during which Aaron and his sons were taught what to do. During those 7 days, all of the service in the Mishkan was done by Moshe Rabbeinu. On the 8th day, which was Rosh Chodesh Nisan, in the 2nd year in the desert, that day is the day on which Aaron and his children take over the service in the Beit HaMikdash. And of course, that's also the day that is marked with the tragedy of the death of Nadav Avihu, two sons of Aaron. And then on that same Rosh Chodesh Nisan, the princes of each one of the tribes will begin bringing sacrifices day by day. That's going to be the dedication. Those are the dedication ceremonies. The inauguration ceremonies are the 7 days that precede Rosh Chodesh Nisan. What's described over here is what will take place at the inauguration. And the inauguration is going to be described in Parashat Tzav. The dedication is going to be described in Parashat Naso. So here is sort of, it may sound a little confusing, but it's not so confusing. There's inauguration, and there's dedication, and here we're also going to we're going to find something that we will see happens a number of times in history. It's going to be pointed out by Rashi in this Sedra. There are going to be sacrifices brought during inauguration and dedication that are not normal kinds of sacrifices. Different in kind, different in halacha. Things that would be totally unacceptable under any other circumstances all of a sudden become acceptable when we're talking about dedication. For example, in the dedication of the Mishkan, as we said, the princes of each tribe are going to bring sacrifices, and there's a prince that's going to bring sacrifices, private, personal sacrifices on Shabbat. That's prohibited. That's always prohibited. On Shabbat, the only sacrifices that can be brought are the Korban Tomid, the daily Korban, the communal sacrifices can be brought on Shabbos. Personal sacrifices cannot. But at the time of the dedication of the Mishkan, that's what's going to take place. When Shlomo HaMelech is going to dedicate the Bet HaMikdash, in middle of the days of dedication, Yom Kippur. And you know what it says? Everybody ate and drank on Yom Kippur. Shomu Shabayim, do you understand? Special dispensation. The Bet HaMikdash is being dedicated. And they ate on Yom Kippur. Ate and drank and made merry on Yom Kippur. Is that unusual? I'd say that's a bit unusual. We will see that the sacrifices that Yechezkel is going to talk about are unusual. Those that were brought when Ezra dedicated the second Beth HaMikdash, unusual, under other circumstances, absolutely unacceptable. This is one of the ideas we're going to have to talk about, but we're going to go step by step, step by step. You know, even if I go step by step, I may even, you know, drag things out that long that we won't have to come face to face with all of the serious problems here. But no, at least there are going to be some major ideas that have to be expressed. Perek Men Gimel, Ata Ben Adam, Hageid et Beit Yisrael, Ata Ben Adam. You, we know already that Yechezkel is called by God Ben Adam, Son of Man. Hagedet Beit Yisrael at HaBayit. Tell the house of Israel what the Bayit, what the temple is going to be like. V'yikomu me'avonutehem. They should feel ashamed and embarrassed of their sins. U'modedu et tachnit. And then they should measure the design of the Beit HaMikdash. A necessary preface to it all is that Klal Yisrael do tshuva, that they should feel ashamed and embarrassed. A sense of inner shame and embarrassment is a necessary step in the process of tshuva. And if they will be ashamed from all that they did, Surat HaBayit, difficult pasuk, Surat HaBayit, the temple and its design, Utchunato, or Surat HaBayit is the form and its design, Umotzav, Umovav, its exits and its entrances, V'chol tzurotav, and all its forms, that kol chukotav, and all its regulations, V'chol tzurotav. By the way, you may have noticed that the word tzura is now repeated for the third time. V'chol toratav, and all of the laws, hodautam, let them know them. Uchetov le'inehem, and write it down before their very eyes, v'yishmeru, and they should guard and keep and remember kol tzurato, all of the forms, that kol chukotav, and all of the laws v'asu otam, and they shall do them. What is this tzura? Time and time again, tzura. The Malbim says there are three basic forms. There is something that is true of every one of the temples. There are certain aspects that are the same. Mishkan, first Bet HaMikdash, second Bet HaMikdash, third Bet HaMikdash. They all have to have a Holy of Holies. They have to have an entranceway. They have to have courtyards. It makes no difference whether it's Mishkan, first Bet HaMikdash, second Bet HaMikdash, third Bet HaMikdash to be built, which is going to be described by Yechezkel. There is also the unique form that each one had that was different from the other. There's a question about it, that the Bet HaMikdash was far, far different in size, and in so many other ways it was far, far different than the Mishkan. There were things in the second Bet HaMikdash that were different than the first, and the third ultimately is going to have all sorts of things that will be different. And then there are unique forms with regard to specific items in the Bet HaMikdash. There's going to be a description over here of the Mizbeach. This Haftorah is going to talk part one about the construction of the altar, and part two, it's going to talk about the inauguration ceremony. Those are the two aspects that will be dealt with by the Haftorah.
This is the second Beit Hamikdash or the third Beit Hamikdash?
That's a very good question. Are we talking about the second Beit Hamikdash, or are we talking about the third Beit Hamikdash? And since you've asked the question, see what I'm going to ask you to do? I'm going to ask you to turn over for a moment. And we're going to take a look at number one and number four. Yes, Malka? Inauguration? Ah. Malka has to, I learn Hebrew from her and she learns English from me. Inauguration? Good. Inauguration, I'm using the word inauguration as hachinuch likrat, the education of the Kohanim that they should be prepared to serve in the Beit HaMikdash. That's what takes place in Parashat Tetzaveh. Aaron and his sons are inaugurated. There are eight days that are discussed in the parasha. They are the Shmonat Yemei Miluim. Shmonat Yemei Miluim.
More like an
induction. Induction. No. Yeah, but I thought induction. I don't know. I just never saw the word induction used with regard to a Migdal. So I'm using inauguration, because to inaugurate somebody, no, you inaugurate the President of the United States. You prepare him for his job. He has to take his oath that he is going to protect the democracy of the United States of America. That's inauguration. Inauguration is what takes place, or what is described in this Sedra, how the Moshe Rabbeinu is going to put the garments of the Kohen Gadol on Aaron, the garments of the regular Kohanim on his children. They're going to be taught how to shecht and how to sprinkle the blood. There are so many things that are going to happen. That's the inauguration. That's the chinuch, Rashi calls it. Or it's called Yemei Miluim, when their hands are filled with all that is necessary for them to be able to do it. And then there's a dedication of a building after it's finished and after it's standing. Isn't that when you make a dedication? You know, I'm beginning to think that the words that I chose are very good. Dedication is Chanukat HaBayit. Inauguration is Yemei Miluim. Now, you can ask, what are we talking about here? Are we talking about second Beit HaMikdash, third Beit HaMikdash? What are we talking about? So I'll tell you what we're talking about. We're going to read the Rambam in number one, and then there's the Rambam number four on the second side. Kol shiurei hanesachim ha'amurim b'sefer Yecheskel, all of the measurements of the libations, nesachim, with every carbon you had to bring a certain amount of oil, a certain amount of wine. Kol shiurei, all of the measures of the nesachim that are said in Sefer Yecheskel. Uminyan otam hakorbanot, and the number of sacrifices. V'sidrei ha'avoda haketuvim sham, and the order of the service that's written in Sefer Yecheskel. Kulim kulam miluim hein. They are all inauguration. The ein no hagin ledorot, and they are not the halacha for all generations. Ela hanovi tziva, the Navi commanded, Ufeidesh Ketzadiyu Makrivin HaMiluim, he explains how they're going to bring the sacrifices of Miluim. And remember again, Pashas Tetzaveh is talking about the Shmonat Yemei Miluim, the inauguration. In Chanukat HaMizbeach, Bimei HaMelech HaMashiach. We're being taught over here what the dedication is going to be like in the days of King Mashiach, when the third Beit HaMikdash is going to be built. And just like the princes, as we described, the princes are going to dedicate the Mishkan, and that's going to take place in the month of Nisan. They brought sacrifices that such do not exist for all generations. They grieved with Shabbat. I gave you the example that they brought sacrifices on Shabbat. Kach hanasi makriv chanukato b'Shabbat la'atid. The nasi, the prince, is going to bring his dedication sacrifice on Shabbat la'atid in the future. Kasher meforasham, as is explained there in Yecheskel. The chen korbanot shehikrivu bimei Ezra, haboim mei hashivim, those sacrifices that were brought in the days of Ezra by those who returned from the captivity, mei hashivim, the captivity of Babel, miluim hayu, these were inauguration sacrifices. Ve'enam nohagin ledorot, and they are not the way sacrifices are brought for all generations. These are all exceptions. The korbanos in Tetzaveh are exceptions. The korbanos that were brought at the dedication of the first Beit HaMikdash were exceptions to the rule. The sacrifices that were brought at the dedication of the second Beit HaMikdash in the days of Ezra, those who returned, were also exceptions. And what Yecheskel is going to tell us about the dedication of the third Beit HaMikdash, exceptions to the rule. Exceptions to the rule. We may yet get to the point at which we will realize that there is a difference between ongoing sacrifice and the moment at which God brings His divine presence to rest on the Mishkan of the Beit HaMikdash. When God brings His divine presence down, that is a moment of great chiba, great love. And in a moment of great love, the unusual and the exceptional is acceptable. And each one of the korbanos that are listed over here are the korbanos that come at the moment of a burst of great passionate love between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Am Yisrael. And at that moment, the unacceptable becomes acceptable. The unhalachic becomes halachic. The unusual becomes that which can be done. Yes? We're going to have to explain that idea. Good question. Yechezkel was one of those who went into exile the same time that Mordechai went into exile, before the destruction of the first Bet HaMikdash. That's a very good question. I'm telling you today, I'll tell you what a question is. So why is he talking about the third Bet HaMikdash? So we're going to have to see something else over here. You're doing very well today on such a difficult Haftarah. You're doing very well, and I'll explain to you right away. That's going to be one of the major themes in just one moment. But first we're finishing with Fagi and that, and then we get to you. V'chein korbanos shekrivu v'mei ezra haboyim ha'ashvim miluim hoyu v'einu noigu l'doros. Avol dvorim hanogem l'dorot. Those things that, those halachas with regard to sacrifice that are for all generations, hein divrei Torah shepigashmu, those are the words of Torah that we have explained. The Rambam gives us all the halachas of korbanos. As they received them from Moshe, ein lahosif aleihem, you can't add to them, the ein legroa, and you can't subtract anything. All the Rambam is saying that all of the halachas that he's going to tell you in the laws of korbanos and the laws of Bet HaMikdash, those are the laws for all generations. But there are exceptions, and he wants you to know that all of the exceptions were the sacrifices that were brought at the initiation, that's another nice word, that can go with inauguration and dedication. And that we will see, Chazal talk about the moment of great, the burst of God's love to the Jewish people. Now, to finish the answer to Fagi's question, go to number 4. Binyan Shebona Shlomo, that building that was built by Shlomo, Kvar Meforash B'Malachim, in chapter 6 and 7 of Sefer Malachim, it's all explained. V'chein Binyan He'atid Lihibanot, the building that is going to be built, the third Beit HaMikdash. Afal pi shehu katuv b'Yecheskel, even though it is written, say for Yecheskel, eino meforash u'mevoar, it's not so explained and it's not so clear. That's why I told you it's going to be a difficult Haftarah. V'anshei bayit sheni kishebonu b'mei Ezra, the people of the second Beit HaMikdash, when they built it in the days of Ezra, bonuhu kibinyan Shlomo, the second Bet HaMikdash was built with the plans of the first Bet HaMikdash, but those aspects of the construction that are written here in Yechezkel, that are clearly understood, were incorporated into the second Bet HaMikdash. That means the second Bet HaMikdash did in fact have in it already seeds of the future. Now I want to answer Annette's question. Okay? Back to the first side. On the bottom, at the end of the Haftarah, I have Rashi from the beginning of this section of the Haftarah. First line, which says, Matsati, Rashi says, I found the following. And what he's really doing is he's quoting a Gemara that appears in Nasechet Brachot, where the Gemara says the following, Re'uya haita bi ashniya shel Ezra ki bi'a rishona shel Yehoshua. How many times did Jews enter Eretz Israel? And how many times did Jews enter Eretz Yisrael from a halachic point of view? I mean, I heard Faith Kahana when she said three. She is correct. Historically, she's absolutely correct. There are three entries of the Jewish people into Eretz Yisrael. The first as a people was in the days of Yahushua. The second was the pitiful few that returned with Ezra from Bavel. And we, all of us here, are parts of the third return to Eretz Yisrael. Even the Shlomazels amongst us are all part of the third return to Eretz Yisrael. Okay? Alright, I couldn't help that. From a halachic point of view, the Rambam says there were two entries to Eretz Yisrael. There was the entry in the days of Yahushua, where the land was sanctified by Yahushua. And we've already talked a number of times about this Rambam, where the Rambam says that the first sanctity of Eretz Yisrael, which was done in the days of Yahushua, came to an end with the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash. Because the first sanctity of Eretz Yisrael was through conquest. Yahushua conquered the land. Kibush is not morally destructive. Kibush is that which sanctifies Eretz Yisrael. Jews conquering their own land as a mitzvah given by God. This sanctifies the land. Okay? That was a halachic statement. You might think otherwise. Don't report me. Alright? That sanctity came to an end with the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash. Because the sanctity came through conquest. Along came the counter-conquest of Babylon, the forces of Nebuchadnezzar. And the counter-conquest cancelled out the Kedusha of the first conquest. Are you like that? That was a pretty good sentence. I'm in the middle of a thought, honey. Finish it, I'll give you all the time. Ezra returned to Eretz Yisrael with 42,000 men, and we discussed the 42,000 dredges of Jewish society from Babel that came back here to build the second temple and the second commonwealth, with their 9,000 horses and 6,000 camels, and every one of the animals is mentioned because those are holy animals. Animals that made Aliyah. And that's why Ezra mentions every last animal that came. Yahushua sanctifies the land. And you know, I can't help it, but these are the words of the Rambam. Yahushua sanctifies the land not by conquest. Yahushua sanctifies the land. Ezra. Good. You know, I was always my name's mixed up. I need you. What would I do without you? Ezra sanctifies the land not via conquest, because he has no army. He comes by the good graces of Koresh, king of Persia. He sanctifies the land. I think I should shudder even more when I'm going to use the next word. He's by settlement. If conquest is bad, settlement now is even worse. What a crazy world we're living in. It's unbelievable. I don't know what world I'm living in. But the Rambam makes it quite clear that Yahushua sanctified by conquest, and Ezra and Nehemiah sanctified the land by settlement. So Rashi says the following, and it's a quote from the Gemara in Brachos, that Israel could have been worthy that Ezra would return the same way Yahushua entered the land, with great miracles and conquest. There was a missed opportunity. They were unworthy. It's because they were unworthy that it was not done with great miracles as it was in the days of Yahushua. The Jordan split. The walls of Jericho came tumbling down. The sun stopped in the heavens and the moon remained over Enak Ayalon. It didn't happen miraculously, and it didn't happen through conquest, because Israel was unworthy. But Rashi says, it could have been. There was a missed opportunity. It could have been. It could have been that the second be, or the second time Jews come in the days of Ezra, should have been like the first of Joshua, which is Lavo, to come Bizroa, the might, arms, Ubenes, and with a miracle. Kididashinon, as the Gemara learns from Ad Ya'avor, at the end of Oz Yashir it says, Ad Ya'avor Amcha Hashem, Ad Ya'avor Amzu Kanita, until they cross over. It says it twice. One crossing over is talking about Yehoshua entering Eretz Yisrael, and the second is talking about Ezra entering Eretz Yisrael. But you see, there's a difference. In the first, it says, Ad Yavor Amcho Hashem, until your people, God's people, cross. God is with them. Ad Yavor Amzu, until this people crosses over. The second time they entered Eretz Yisrael was not the way the first was, but it could have been, and it should have been. Ubinyan Zeh, I'm not finished the Rashi. Ubinyan Zeh me'oz ha'yoroi lehem kisha'olu min ha'gola le'gu'ulat olam. Now listen carefully. What could have happened was that building, that second Beit HaMikdash, should have been for eternity and should have signaled the beginning of ultimate redemption. It was an awesome opportunity, and the opportunity wasted, frittered away, never realized, and all the unhappiness of Jewish history that comes afterwards is because there was a missed opportunity. Elish Gorma Chait, Rashi says, Chait caused it, sin caused it. What's the Chait? What sin was it at the time of Ezra? Well, that's the third pshat. We have to see Rashi. What you're saying is the Marsha. The Marsha says the Chait was they didn't come. They didn't come. 42,000 came. And that's another Gemara. The Gemara says in Yuma, would Jews have come in the days of Ezra en masse? Jewish history would have been completely different. The second Beit HaMikdash would have become the ultimate Beit HaMikdash, and redemption would have taken place. Klal Yisrael made a mistake. It was a great opportunity. Unfortunately, it's amazing that we keep surviving with all of these missed opportunities. We keep missing them time and time again. But Rashi says, "Shegora b'chait shelo hayta tshuvatam hogenet." Remember, Yecheskel over here said, "Be ashamed and embarrassed of your sins." If they would have really done tshuva, that second Beit HaMikdash would have been the ultimate. They should have done tshuva al menat shelo lachto, that they will never sin again. But because they didn't do tshuva, so their return to Eretz Yisrael was by the good graces of the nations of the world. V'yotzu b'rishut korash, they left the exile because they were granted permission by a pagan and heathen king called Korash. U'bonu la'atzman, and they built it themselves. These are very significant words of Rashi, because there's a Rashi in Gemara Sukkah where Rashi says that the third Beit HaMikdash is going to come down fully built from heaven. So when Rashi says Ubonu la'atzman, they built it themselves, means that they had to build it themselves, and because they built it themselves, it didn't contain within it the seeds of eternity. V'yeshondim, Rashi says, there are those who say that the chait was B'Bavel nichshlu b'nachriyot. In Bavel, they had stumbled and erred, and there was intermarriage, nachriyot, with non-Jewish women. Non-Jewish women. Those are the positions taken by Rashi. But as we pointed out, it is Marshom says that the chait, why things didn't happen the way they could have happened and they should have happened, is because they didn't come on Aliyah en masse. Did I didn't answer your questions? No?
Yeah.
I tried my best.
No, that doesn't
What you're saying is very, very good, and I tell you, I will explain to you in a moment what she said. I'll explain to you, especially since I heard a similar idea about half an hour ago from her husband. You understand? and that was part of his parsha letter of last week, which I didn't read on the internet yet because I didn't open up my my computer. And it's an idea I think that we have expressed from time to time. In other words, those unworthy people who came with Ezra sanctified the land forever. Never underestimate the power of a Jew. There was a great leader, yes, who brought them into a new covenant, but remember, Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi in the Kuzari says that the great didn't come back. Gedoleim lo olu, the great didn't come back. And who came? The simple people. And those simple people, Amcha are the ones who were able to sanctify the land. I'll tell you, I was at this conference, rabbinic conference in Eilat. I mean, you should have felt different in the country because we resolved all of the outstanding issues. So I was talking with Rav Yaakov Filber, who was one of the interpreters of Rav Kook. So, something that I've expressed here at times, that I have a great deal of trust or confidence. I'll use the word confidence. I was going to use the word faith, which is bad, trust even, but I have confidence in the healthiness of the Jewish people. The people are healthy. The people are more healthy than their leadership. More healthy than their leadership. So he tells me that he once heard from a Tzvi Yehuda Kook, Zecher Tzaddik Livracha, and the davening on Shabbos we say, B'fi Yishonim Tisroman, God is exalted through the mouths of the righteous. B'fi Yishonim Tisroman, Uvesisei Tzadikim Tisbarach, the lips of the righteous you are blessed. B'fi Yishonim Tisroman, Uvesisei Tzadikim Tisbarach, Uvelishon Chasidim Tiskadosh, Uvekerev Kedoshim Tishalol, the Chasidim and the Kedoshim praise. What an array of exceptional and unusual people, said Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook. But you know what's most important? What comes immediately afterwards? Ubimakhalot livavot amcha beit Yisrael. The masses of tens of thousands of Jews. There comes the real praise of God. Not enough to Yisharim. Not enough the Tumimim, not enough the Tzadikim, not enough the Hasidim. You know what you need? Be Mechalot, Livavot, Amcha, Beis Yisrael. The tens of thousands of the masses of Jews. Poshet Yidin, if you can even call a Jew Poshet, had the tremendous power of establishing the sanctity of the second Bet HaMikdash and the land sanctified for the second time, and that sanctity remains until today and into eternity. Yes.
Why don't we emphasize that after the return, there was always someone, a Jew, Anfa, who remained in this land, and through the tenacity, the perversity, whatever you want to call it, from the so-called leadership, they remained under the conditions that they had to remain under. But they were here from that time till, I hope, eternity.
You know what you sound like?
Yeah, like you.
You sound... Toby, you're shaking up the whole place. But what I was going to say was the following. What you're really saying, I believe, is, as one of my children said when we celebrated 20 years of Aliyah, she said that we don't really get credit for coming on Aliyah because you brought us on Aliyah. You know we get credit for sticking it out and staying. Is that what you said?
Yeah, more
Toby?
More
with thinking alike, it's amazing. It's amazing. But that was a great word that my daughter said. Okay. I only have three, and one is here. You can try and figure out. Rashi, you know what Rashi is saying, and you know what the Rambam is saying? It could have been. Everything that Yechezkel describes could have been for eternity. But there are missed opportunities, and they are the seeds of tragedy. There are opportunities, and we have to know. We have to have the wisdom to know what's the moment of great opportunity. You have to be able to grab the moment. Because if you don't grab the moment, I don't know. You don't always get a second chance. I've been speaking with a lot of people here and people in Jewish leadership in the United States, and I'm telling them, those who made big mistakes in assessing the situation 12 years ago, you've been given a second chance now. Can't goof it a second time. But all right, I'm steering clear of that. What it means is the following. That according to, the Rambam goes one step further than Rashi. The Rambam is saying that there are elements of Yechezkel. Yechezkel could have been talking to his people. He could have been saying it for the here and the now in his days. It could have been. And for that reason, some of the things that were said by Yechezkel were indeed incorporated into the construction of the second Beth HaMikdash. But Rashi says, because we didn't make it. There are a number of other ideas that become clear as a result of this. There's a machloket between the Rambam and the Ramban. One of the machloket between the Rambam and the Ramban is with regard to the house of the Chashmonoim. The Rambam talks about the dynasty of the Chashmonoim. He talks about it in festive manner when he talks about Hanukkah. The forces of the Chashmonoim entered the Bet HaMikdash and began the process of rededicating it. That was another dedication. That's one that we didn't mention. By the way, that's also extremely significant. There's the dedication of the Mishkan, first Bet HaMikdash, second Bet HaMikdash, third Bet HaMikdash, but in the middle, there was Hanukkah, very important. The Rambam says, what was so great about Hanukkah? Chozro HaMalchut LiYisrael Yeter Al Matayim Shona royalty, a royal house returned to the Jewish people for more than 200 years. He talks about it as, this is really something great. The Rambam in Chumash, in Pasha Fayechi, says that the kingdom of the Chashmonaim was born in sin. Because Malchus belongs to the house of David, to the tribe of Yehuda. It doesn't belong to the tribe of Levi. And because it was born in sin, then it ultimately had to crumble. I believe the Rambam is best explained by something that is so written from Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, Zechut Tzadik L'Racha. He said that when Chazal, when our rabbis realized that Bayit Sheni was not going to be eternal, when they realized the missed opportunity, they didn't want a kingdom from the house of David. A kingdom from the house of David might have left the impression with the Jewish people that this is it, Mashiach now. It might have left the impression as though this is it, this is Geula now, Yechi HaMelech HaMashiach. But they knew that it wasn't going to last. They knew that the opportunity had been missed. They knew that Gora Machet. Therefore, a kingdom of the house of Levi was far, far better for the Jewish people. Rav Yaakov even says, strange thing, the Gemara says, the name in Torah, how are months described?
First month, second month,
Chodesh Arishon, Chodesh Ashlishi, Chodesh Hachamishi. The first time that we begin to hear names of months, when you come to Megillas Esther, it talks about Adar, it talks about Nisan. Mara says that the names of the months came with them from Babel. So now the question is, if the names of the months came with them from Babel, then they were really Babylonian names. There was, in a sense, they had incorporated into what's now, I always said that I envy my grandchildren. I tell them, I'm going to do something in March. They don't have a clue what I'm talking about. They don't have a clue. If I tell them other bit, oh, now they know what I'm talking about. I was planning something to take place at the beginning of March. So this fellow says, oh, it was a medical Lifnei Rosh Chodesh Adar Sheni. Yeah, right, that's right, Lifnei Rosh Chodesh, before Rosh Chodesh Adar Sheni. Unfortunately, we're fagoyish, you understand. We were raised in America. I don't think we'll ever get it out of our kishkis la'olam va'ed. When I think of a hot summer day, I think of July or August. I don't think of Tammuz or Av. And I tell you, it upsets me because the only thing I got rid of, the only thing I got rid of is Sunday. Sunday? Listen to Sunday. I used to plan the week around, you know, a whole week, and then the Sunday. And Monday you go back to work. What do you mean Monday you go back to work? Sunday you go back to work. But either, that we got rid of. It took, by the way, it took a number of years. For me, it may have been easier because as a rabbi, Sunday was the most difficult day of the week. I worked more on Sunday than I worked the rest of the week. There was a chasen and a bar mitzvah and two unveilings and then three bat mitzvahs and who knows what, you understand. I waited, thank God it's Monday. So Rabbi Yaakov says, do you know why they adopted the names of the months that they brought with them from Bavel? This was another reminder to them, we have not yet rid ourselves of the Golos. This second Bet HaMikdash may not last forever. And that's what Rashi is saying. The missed opportunity. Goram hacheit. And therefore what could have been eternal simply was not going to be eternal. But one thing does remain eternal. The sanctity of the land that was brought about by those 42,000 fellows who came on Aliyah, that sanctity remains ad ha-yom hazeh. There is, let's see, on the other side, I'm just going to introduce you to an idea that I started the shiur with, but I want you to see where the source of this idea is. Number two, we have a pasuk in Shir HaShirim, and below it is the Rashi. I'm going to read the pasuk and the Rashi, and in this amazing Rashi, with a powerful, powerful medrash, all of a sudden you're going to begin to get a feeling of what's taking place here. Bosi legami achosi kala. I am come into my garden. Achoti, my sister. Kala, my bride. Oriti mori im besami. I have gathered my myrrh im besami with my spice. Ochalti, this is the important phrase. Ochalti yari im divshi. I have eaten my honeycomb with my honey. Wait a minute. You don't eat honeycombs. You eat honey. You don't eat... The honeycomb is the wax. You don't eat the honeycomb. And over here, the pasuk is saying, and who's the one that's coming to the garden? The one who's coming to the garden is God. The Rebbeim, I've come into the garden, my sister, my bride. Who is the man or the lad in Shir HaShirim? That's God. Who is the girl, the beloved, the Jewish people? The Jewish people. Bosi Legani, I've come into my garden. We're going to see Rashi is going to bring the message that says, my garden is the Beit HaMikdash. Now watch. I came and ochalti, I ate yari im dishi, the honeycomb with the honey. Yeni im chalavi, my wine with my milk. Ichlu reyim, eat, O friends. Shtu, drink. Vishichru, dodim. Doesn't really mean be drunk, just the English translation is great, to drink abundantly. Rashi says, Basi Lagani. I came into my garden in the days of the dedication of the Beit HaMikdash. He doesn't say which one, but from the context of Shir HaShirim, it's talking about the second Beit HaMikdash. Because already the history of the Jewish people in the Mishkan had begun in the first chapter. By now he's up to the Chanukat HaBayit. Oriti means lakatati, I gathered. Vulosh in Mishnah, Kimlo Oda, Visalo. Okay. Vaf Lishon Mikro, Varua, Kolore, Deach, Ainsham. Hakitonet, Shehiktiru, Anasim. The Ketoret, the incense that was brought by the princes at the dedication of the Mishkan. Ketoret Yochid, it was the Ketoret of an individual, Al Mizbeach Hachitzon, on the outer altar. An individual never brings ketoret. This flies in the face of halacha. It's completely unusual. Number one, that ketoret is brought by an individual. Number two, that it's brought on the outside altar, not the altar inside, which was the altar for the incense. Vinit kabla. And that which was done, shelo kahalacha, not by normative halacha, was accepted. And that's something that does not apply to all generations. That's why it says over here in this pasuk, "Achalti yari im divshi." I ate the honeycomb with the honey. Do you know what it means? Yesh dvashu who gadol bekonim. There is honey that grows on trees or on stalks. Kinyin Shinema Bi Yarat Hadvash Viyarat Lashon Kone Cane like sugar cane. Kamova Tosim Basuf, she placed, Miriam placed the basket in which Moshe was, she placed it in the suf, the growth, the growth, the reeds, and the Targum says the Shavita, Shavita Biyaro, she placed it in the Yaro. Yaro means the cunning. Umotzin advash, from this cane, you suck out the honey, and then you throw away the cane. Alright? Umashlichen ha'etz, you throw away the wood. Vani, God says, listen. Meirov chiba, because of my great love, ochalti yarni in divshi. I ate the cone or the cane with the honey. Ochalti hakone im hadvash. And what does hakone im hadvash mean? Et she'eno roi im haroi. That which is normally unacceptable, together with that which is